From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in law school when a woman named Kenyatta Berry was studying tort and contract law. She needed a break. She had some curiosity about an ex-boyfriend. You see, he came from a prominent African-American family in Atlanta with an unusual last name, and Kenyatta wondered what she could find. Well, before long, she was hooked on the detective aspects of that kind of digging, and she began to wonder about her own past. Berry's great-grandmother was born in Livingston County. Her great-aunt lived in Rochester. But Berry had only been up here briefly when she was 3 years old. She wanted to know why her family had chosen the Rochester and Western New York region just for starters. Well, today you know Kenyatta Berry as one of the stars of Genealogy Roadshow on PBS. The new season debuts next month, May 17th at 8 p.m. on WXXI-TV. Berry's been in Rochester because last night did a presentation at the Little Theater, had the chance to reunite with some family members on stage. We're going to learn all about that in a moment. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. Kenyatta Berry, great to have you on Connections. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I guess I would say welcome home-ish, right?
Yes, definitely.
Kind of like welcome home. And also here's Josh Nichols. He's a meteorologist for News 10 NBC. Wanted to invite Josh because we wanted to get the perspective of someone who's not working professionally in genealogy, but got obsessed with it because really, for you, is that a fair word, an obsession with this?
It definitely became an obsession, and it became a moment where I could discover a part of myself that I didn't even know existed.
Well, I can't wait to hear what Josh has discovered, because you go all the way back now. You got into the 1500s or 1600s?
1500s. Found records going back to the Anglican Church in England. But
wow.
But finding people along the way online who I didn't even know I was related to, and then was able to connect with, and then find out a lot of different stories that I didn't even know existed.
Well, we already had listener questions this morning knowing that Kenyatta was coming. Got to ask her, what does she think about the ancestries? What about the DNA test? Somebody said, don't they like take a chunk of skin and send it away and tell you, you know, we'll get to that. But I want to back up and ask Kenyatta Berry about last night and what you have been able to learn. Tell us about how it went last night.
So last night was great. I think the biggest thing, surprise for me, I was mostly nervous in meeting my cousins. So I have second and third cousins that live in the area, and I met for the first time. So it was cool to be there to talk about my family and share the family history with them, because they didn't know a lot of the stories. So that was great. I thought the questions were great. The turnout was great. The venue was awesome. And for me, it's just really important to kind of tell these stories. And I love getting out and meeting people and hearing their family stories as well.
Now, going back to law school, what was it about your ex-boyfriend? You know, because most people thought ex-boyfriend, she was digging up dirt. But it wasn't necessarily digging up dirt, right?
No, it
was more curiosity.
It was more curiosity. So his name was George Dwelly Lyons. His third great grandfather was named George Henry Dwelly, so spelled D-W-E-L-L-E. Very unique surname. So I just decided, in taking that break from studying at the Library of Michigan, to look at his family, and they were very prominent. So there was a ton of information written about them in various African American newspapers. But what was interesting is that one of his great aunts was the first female doctor, or first female black doctor, to own a clinic in Atlanta on Sweet Auburn Avenue. And she had a ton of information written about her. And one book, one of the resources, was a book called The History of the American Negro and His Institutions. And it was edited by A.B. Caldwell. So I dig up this book, and This gentleman had someone interview George Henry Dwelly, and the first couple of sentences said, "I was born on January 26, 1833, a slave in Columbia County, Georgia. My father was a white man, C.J. Cook, and my mother was a slave, Mary Thomas." That type of information you don't get every day. And that had me hooked. And from that point forward, I was like, this is a gold mine, and just start digging and learning so much more about his family. And so that is so that just became like my obsession, and it became my escape from law. And so that's how I kind of got hooked. And then I started doing my family, and there wasn't as much information.
It's kind of like me with an escape from meteorology.
Yeah.
It's something else. You know, when you're passionate about history, or you're passionate about one thing, then you become passionate about something else. Mm-hmm. It allows you to, you know, explore, and it's like you're in a whole other world.
Yeah, so true. It is. Yeah.
When did you let your ex-boyfriend know you were digging on the family?
Oh, I let him know pretty upfront.
You did? Okay.
Okay, yeah, because he actually looked like his third great grandfather, which was crazy. So that was a little interesting to me. But he knew that I was digging on the family. He wasn't as interested as I was in it. But what is fascinating is I was speaking in Sacramento a couple weeks ago, and I'm talking about the family, you know, how I got started. And this woman is from Detroit, but lives in Sacramento, and she says, I lived across the street from that family in Detroit. And one of his cousins is in Sacramento. I'm like, well, you have to introduce me because I have all their family history. So it's fascinating, you know, 17 plus years later that story still resonates and there's someone who's connected.
Now, go ahead, Josh.
Well, no, and you know, she mentioned a book that you had found, you know, some incredible information in. Mm-hmm. And as I was doing my research, I found my Nichols side in a book called Genealogical and Family History of Western New York, a record of achievements of her people in the making of a commonwealth and the building of a nation.
Oh, wow.
Now, as I was looking at that, I said, my gosh, I said, you know, I came to Rochester 16 years ago from eastern Massachusetts, having gone to school in Vermont, frankly, in 2000, never even recognizing where Rochester, New York was. I mean, I was not familiar with the city whatsoever, being a Bostonian. Please don't hold that against me. Nevertheless, here I find this connection with Western New York. The fact that my family came all the way from England on my dad's side, settled in Connecticut, and then were one of the pioneering families of the United States, crossing into Western New York, settling in Western New York, and then ultimately landing in Kansas, Colorado, California, but making that westward progress with the westward expansion. Knew nothing about this, nothing whatsoever. And finding Civil War heroes for the Union side, finding Revolutionary War heroes, and then recognizing that my dad's side was here in 1629. You know, came over as a widower with his son and just starting, just not knowing, you know, saying, I'm leaving England, I'm coming over here, I'm going to start a new life. And when I talked to my dad, he said, I never knew any of this. And I was able to go through and find all of these different discoveries and say, did you know that your fourth great-grandfather settled in Western New York and was one of the biggest merchant farmers in Western New York and served in the War of 1812 twice? He said, I had no idea. I said, well, neither did I.
Yeah. Now, but what you start to find, especially with some of the sort of the societal success your family had, I imagine, and Kenyatta can speak to this, when we go back through our privilege, let's just throw the word privilege out there. It's probably easier to find versus if you were born a slave and you didn't even have a last name, right?
Right.
So, and I know some of your work focuses on African American genealogy in particular. If you go back to families that, as you mentioned, someone said, I was born a slave.
Yes.
How do you even search, how do you go about piecing that together? Because Josh and I can probably do it a little more easily than families that have a slave history, right?
Right, yeah, and it's a challenge. I mean, African-American genealogy is a challenge overall, and then slave genealogy, I chose it because it's such a challenge, and it's important work to do. But there are records related to slavery because slaves were property, and so they had records associated. The thing is, you have to understand and know the last slave owner because those records will be tied to that person. So how do you find that information out? As with George Dwelly, that was an unusual surname, right? So sometimes you have an unusual surname, then maybe the slave took the name
that
of the owner.
That helps, right?
That helps.
Okay.
That helps.
But if you don't, like, kind of walk me through a process and what you're going to do.
So if you don't, so like Barry, for example, common name.
Yep.
What I did with my ancestor, actually Lewis Carter, another common name, is I went through Freedmen's Bureau records. So the Freedmen's Bureau was organized after the Civil War to kind of get these 4 million African Americans, kind of get them on their feet because they were slaves and they really, now they had to go out and work and stuff. So I went through the Freedmen's Bureau records and they had labor contracts. And so Lewis Carter, my third great grandfather, had a labor contract with a Dr. John W. Taylor of Madison County, Virginia. Well, John W. Taylor was more than likely his last slave owner, and he had a sharecropping agreement. So basically, he'd farm John's land and he'd keep 50% of that for himself and his family, and John take the other 50%. So in doing that, I now research John Taylor's family to find records related to my Carter ancestor. Why did he choose the name Carter? I have no idea. I don't know that connection. But if you're looking for something with a common name or you're looking, trying to find slave records, the Freedmen's Bureau records are a really good resource, and they're now being digitized and they're going to be made available online for free. and they're about 50% done with that.
And how did you go from that initial research that hooked you to Genealogy Roadshow? What was that path?
Well, it's a funny story because it wasn't a direct path at all. I got on the show. I didn't really audition to be on the show. I was president of the Association of Professional Genealogists, and as president of APG, we represent 2,700 now genealogists around the world. And I went to meet with a couple folks because they wanted to hire local genealogists in LA, and I live in Santa Monica, so I went to meet with them. Well, I didn't realize I was meeting with two people from casting. And PBS had got a diversity grant, I guess, for the first season. So the two folks from casting look at each other, and they look at me. And I'm, you know, I lived on the East Coast, so I do the traditional I'm going to wear my black dress to lunch type of thing. So they were like, we can't do a Skype now, but you need to go home and do a Skype. And I said, no. I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to be in TV. You know, I work in tech. I don't do TV stuff. And they made me go home and do the Skype, and I didn't even know what I was doing. I'd never done a Skype before. And they kind of coached me, and they said, you're doing great. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't even know if this is going to work. And they sent it off, and then months later, they're like, PBS loves you. So I was sort of shocked. I didn't tell anyone the first season. It took me probably...
Wait, you didn't tell anyone? What do you mean you didn't tell anyone?
I didn't tell anyone that I was filming. Like, my mother knew, but I didn't tell...
People you knew didn't even know you were doing this?
No, I didn't tell anyone I was filming until finally, I work for a software company when I'm not on TV. And finally, when it was starting to air, I said, okay, I at least need to tell my boss because I'm going to be on TV now. Yes. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience, but I love it. I love it.
Well, season 3 starts next month, May 17th, 8 p.m. on PBS, WXXI TV. You had how many people sent in and said, pick me?
So we had 10,000 applications.
10,000.
Yeah, wow. 10,000 applications.
For how many slots?
For about 40.
Oh, gosh. Now, in this case, you can't vet 10,000 and choose the 40 most interesting because nobody's got time for that.
Right. So there's
so
a
how
team.
How did you choose?
Yeah, so there's a team. So I personally, I'm not involved in the casting, but we have a team of researchers who do the first level of going through the stories, right? And we look at things like, do they really know more than they're telling us because they just want to be on TV? Is this a difficult question for us to answer? Have we done this story before? Because PBS wants variety, right? And then once we go through that, we narrow it down, and that's how we pick the cities. So we picked our locations based on the applications we received. And then we narrow it down, and sometimes when we, you know, there may be a slot, I'll do maybe 6 people or something like that, but I probably started with a slate of like 20. And either they fall out because they don't show up, or their story doesn't pan out, but at the end of the day, we have to make it interesting. Because when I'm talking to you about your family, you're all in, right? Because it's your family. But the viewer at home is not all in because it's not their family, right? So we have to make sure it's an interesting story and we teach them something as well.
So do you have to end up picking and choosing, you know, exactly, you know,
who gets on the air?
Yeah, we actually do. I mean, and that's a process, you know, we work with, so we're not affiliated with a kind of a member station. So we work with folks at PBS Corporate and a group there that vets it as well. Because you got to think about the stories that we do, you know. I mean, for African-American stories, there's always going to be something tied to slavery. I mean, that's the only way, you know, we can go sometimes. But we still want to make it very interesting and have a unique perspective.
Well, and for our listeners who haven't seen the show, kind of lay out what the show, in general, how it works. And then maybe share a story or two. You don't have to give away anything from the upcoming season.
Okay.
But I mean, you have had moments where you get to tell people, you know, I love watching these moments where you're saying, this is your family, you know, look on their faces is really, really amazing. And I want to know what that's like. But why don't you let our listeners know, if they haven't seen it, what the show in general is like, and then some of those moments.
Yeah, so in general, with Genealogy Roadshow, it's sort of, you know, we wanted to create a show that was for everyday person, right? You didn't need to be famous to be on the show, because we think it's important everyone has a story. So you submit your casting application, you do a Skype with a couple of our producers. We have story producers who work with us. We have a team of researchers. And once you're selected, we don't meet until I show up at that table. So I don't meet you beforehand until I sit down and tell you your family story. And we usually film at a historic location. And then, you know, the filming takes about 45 minutes. And it's cut down to about a 7-minute segment. One of the things I think that's interesting for folks that want to be on the show, realize there's a lot going on. There's going to be a camera sliding back and forth in front of you. You have to try to focus on me and not look at everyone else running around doing things. You know, for folks in TV, no, it's kind of a zoo sometimes. So it's important to note that because I think that overwhelms people. And, you know, I still get nervous every time I sit down. And it's always good because the person across from me is nervous, too. So we kind of feed off each other, which is great. But some of my favorite stories, and one story I talk about a lot, is a woman, Gail Lukasik, from season 2. And we were in St. Louis. And Gail, you know, had lived her entire life as a white woman, and she started doing her research. And her mom came from New Orleans, but she had never been to New Orleans. Gail does the research, and she realizes as she's scrolling through the microfilm, she sees her mom's name with a C next to it for colored. And so Gail was shocked. So then she orders her mother's birth certificate, says the same thing. Gail confronts her mother, and her mother denied. And then she showed her the proof, and she said, yes, I did pass for white. I was born African descent in New Orleans. And Gail knew this, kept it a secret for 15 years. Her mother said, you can't tell anyone, but until after I die, you can do what you want. And as soon as her mother died, she was on the show. And I was able to share with Gail that not only was she had known about her grandfather, so she thought her mother's father was had African-American heritage. She didn't know about her grandmother as well. So I revealed that to her on the show. Her grandfather got remarried. Her mother had 4 half-siblings she'd never met. One of those kids, one of their friends, I guess, of the children, was watching Genealogy Roadshow and contacted Gail. And so now Gail has this entire family that she didn't know anything about.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and it's just that moment, you know, for her, and it was brave of her to come on to the show, you know, because she's a mystery writer, she had, you know, had her identity had changed. And just to share that story, and sitting there with her family, with her husband, and her husband saying, you know, your mother never liked to go out in the sun, and I'm like, because she didn't want to tan. It was just like all these things came back to her. And it was amazing, and she since, or is writing a book about this as well, and this experience. So that was definitely one of my favorite stories because I think it had such a happy ending with her finding that family.
Well, listeners, I'm starting to see some of your comments and questions coming in. I promise we'll get to them. Twitter, email, and if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, as we talk about, well, our ancestry, our genealogy, our history with Kenyatta Berry. From Genealogy Roadshow on PBS, Josh Nichols is here as well, meteorologist for News 10 NBC, sharing his experience. All right, so if I'm applying, here's my story, and you got to say if this makes the cut.
All okay. Right?
So here, this what I'm about to tell you is a true story,
okay.
And I have wanted to really dig. I've actually really wanted to do two things for a while, especially talking to some cousins. What I want to start doing is making recordings of all living family members because mm-hmm. it's amazing how...
Very important.
Isn't that
very
so important?
Important. I
imagine you've been doing that.
Quick chime in here because when I was a junior in high school, I was able to interview my grandmother. Now, my mother's side is Eastern European Jewish and Russian Jewish and came over in the late 1800s. And when interviewing my grandmother, I asked some very pointed questions about my great-grandparents' experience in Russia and what she knew about, you know, their experience there and what they took with them as they came here, literally fleeing for their lives, running away from the Tsar. And my great-grandfather was a musician who danced for the Tsar in the Tsar's palace, you know, as you know, whatever that entails. I don't know. the Zatsky, you know. So anyway, so I'm talking to my grandmother, and I said to her, I said, well, what did they experience? What did they see? She just looked at me, and she said, next question.
Oh, man.
Very deep. And I said, wow. well, banana. I said, you know, what do you mean? Next question. Mm. Basically saying what they saw, the atrocities that they saw, she didn't want to get into. But they saw atrocities. And it horrible,
but
horrible
even
things.
Having that, you have the audio of that, yeah? You still have
I have the video.
The videos. I mean, even having that is an amazing thing. And even just the idea of looking into genealogy and history makes me want to start recording now for future generations. Mm-hmm. Because, boy, if I could have something from 100 years ago, wouldn't that blow your mind? Well, so Kenyatta, for me, Dawson's not even my last name. Mm. I mean, it is. It is now. It's been for a while. But my great-grandfather was Axel Gustafsson. He came from Sweden, and all the Danes went to Penyan, all the Swedes went to Jamestown. That's how it was up here. And so he came to the United States and didn't speak a whole lot of English, had a heavy accent, and was told, if you want this job, was applying for a job, you want this job, you got to learn English. And you have to change your name. No one likes pronouncing Gustafsson. So they gave him Dawson. And the old family lore is that across the street there was a cabaret and the name on the board was Dawson. So we were named after something scandalous. That's one of the stories. The other family story was that he didn't have the money to get to Jamestown. And the person who gave him a lift, the person who basically made it happen for him, was named Dawson. And he took that name as a thank you to whoever that was, to get him where he needed to go. So nobody really knows anymore, other than our family is Gustafsson, not Dawson. It's been Dawson for the better part of 100 years. But
And have you done some research?
Not a whole lot. And now, well, I was going to after talking to you, and then I realized how much time I didn't have to go into that. I knew I would become addicted to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually like nervous to start this process because I know how, I mean, Kenyatta changed your life, mm-hmm. even digging into your ex-boyfriend's past. So anyway, how do I even start? Where do I go to start looking up roots and background?
What's interesting with your story, you have two very different stories,
yeah,
right? And so we all have family stories. So the best way to start is to start with those relatives that are still alive, the oldest ones, recording, yeah. such as you did, getting information from them, interviewing them. You can get a lot of information online today. It's much easier than it was when I started 17 plus years ago. So you can get census records. The 1940 census is the latest census that's been released, and that census is available online for free. So anyone that was around in 1940, you can actually search for your grandparents or great-grandparents, and it will tell everyone that's living in the household. So that's usually the first place to start, right? So doing the interview, looking at the 1940 census as well.
And the earlier censuses have so much more information.
Yes.
Which is really remarkable, mm-hmm. including, you know, whether you were, you know, a slave or mm-hmm. Or, for example, they would write if a person would not be able to read, they would record whether they would, you know, mm-hmm. they would
on a
call
census?
Them. Oh yeah, there would even be records of sanity. They mm-hmm. would call them insane, which would probably mean that they had some kind of a disability mm-hmm. potentially, but they would just label them. They would just put a label on them.
Yeah, and that's on census records. Yeah, and that's more that I think in the 1880s they did that, and definitely the 1930s. So when you start with the 1940, you go work your way backwards, and the census records are available from 1790 to 1940.
And there are mortality schedules too.
Yes, yeah, mortality schedules,
which is actually kind of interesting because you can find out if certain relatives died of a particular disease, mm-hmm. or you know, like for example, I found out that one of my great grandfathers died of tuberculosis, mm-hmm. And it turns out that he was in the iron industry. Where he was in a particular industry that was conducive to contracting tuberculosis. I'm trying to think of the name of the person who would, you know.
Yes, I see the movement you're making, but I can't think of it. Yeah.
Basically, working in a factory with a lot of dust and a lot of smoke and that kind of thing, and mm-hmm. just died at an early age.
Well, Kathy is asking if this is only domestic. If this research that goes back through these censuses, she just says, if this takes us overseas, is that where the trail stops, Kenyatta?
No, the trail does not stop going overseas. What I'm talking about for census records is definitely just U.S. But you can, one of my favorite sites is FamilySearch.org because it's free. And FamilySearch actually has records that are from all over the world. So you go to FamilySearch, you can actually narrow your search down by country. They also have a wiki which helps you learn more about that particular region and what records are available. So this, most of my research has been U.S.-based, but I've done some European research for clients as well.
So I can go back domestically. If my great-grandfather came from Sweden, oh boy, you know, 1940-ish, maybe I can see early census records mm-hmm. there. And then I maybe have to start looking at some other pieces of information overseas. So.
Yeah, you would need to look at where records are available from Sweden. But again, FamilySearch is a site that's owned by the Mormon Church, and they've gone around the world mm-hmm. microfilming records. Yeah.
It is difficult, amazing. Though, to find records, I know, on my Eastern European, Russian, Jewish side, mm-hmm. because a lot of the records were destroyed in Russia around the time of the Tsar, either burned or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So in doing my family research, mm-hmm. my mom became a little bit exasperated when I said, I'm doing all this stuff and I find all this stuff on my dad's side. My mom says, what about me?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, you know, it's tougher. Mm-hmm. It's much tougher because of, you know, some of the atrocities that took place.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, well, let's get a short break and I'll start taking some of your questions. I want to mention as well my colleague Beth Adams, who Kenyatta talked to. You might have heard their conversation yesterday. Later this month, Morning Edition host Beth Adams is going to begin a monthly radio series exploring the family history of Rochesterians. Some of the names you will recognize, but all of the people we feature will have fascinating stories to uncover with the help of genealogist Barb Kohler of the Rochester Public Library. The first installment of the series is going to air in 2 weeks on the morning of Monday, April 18th, when we discover the family history of Betty Strassenberg. So that'll be a fun series coming up. We are watching and learning from Kenyatta Berry, we'll put it that way, and all the great work that they do there. And so Beth has got that rolling out in 2 weeks. Hope you'll check that out. Let's get a short break, and we'll come back with Kenyatta Berry, host of Genealogy Roadshow on PBS. Josh Nichols is here as well, meteorologist for WHEC-TV. And your comments and questions next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections, first hour, the Reshaping Rochester series has a question. How can a river connect a city instead of dividing it? And how can Rochester learn from other river cities? We will look at the issue. Then second hour, the so-called right to Yelp laws. On the federal and state level, they're considering laws to prevent businesses from penalizing you from reviewing them online. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Genealogy Roadshow's back on PBS next month. By the way, you said you're still nervous when you do television?
I am, yes.
Do you love it, though?
I love it. Absolutely love it.
It suits you so beautifully.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I think the day I'm not nervous, there's something wrong, but I love it.
How many episodes, by the way?
So we did four in season one, we did six season two, and we do six this season as well.
All right. Launching May 17th at 8 p.m., WXXI-TV. Eric writes to us, how far back can an average guy expect to go? I've hit a wall around 1,500 with people moving between France, England, and Wales. I think 1,500 is pretty good. What do you think, Kenya?
Yeah, 1,500 is really good. I don't have my personal experience hasn't been records going back that far, especially in Europe. I don't know, Josh, if you had any experience with stuff like that?
Only the fact that, you know, I was able to get in touch with a cousin that mm-hmm. I didn't know that I even had through Ancestry.com. And then that cousin got in touch with me and then was able to mail me some mm-hmm. records that they had the ability to go into a particular church in England, and they had records of, you know, the birth, the death, the christening, that kind of thing. And to see, you know, here's my 10th great-grandfather's name, mm-hmm. you know, written in a church record from England. That was pretty remarkable, you mm-hmm. know, to see that birth record. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it is doable.
Yeah, and maybe with the church records as well as there's another site called Find My Past, which focuses on England, Ireland, Wales type of genealogy. So that could also be a resource as well.
Well, Marty is asking just what resources are reliable and what's not. Can you ask your guest about that? Well, you mentioned, let's see, what was the site you just mentioned?
Find My Past.
Find My Past. You like that one?
I like that one. FamilySearch.org is free. Find My Past is subscription-based. Ancestry has some good records as well. They have unique content collection. And then there's another company called MyHeritage, which is based out of Israel. So those are sort of the big four genealogy companies.
Fold 3, I think, is the
one? And Fold 3 is, yes, Fold 3 is another one that's owned by Ancestry, and that focuses on military history.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, because, Josh, you've done Ancestry.
Ancestry.com. Did the DNA test as well.
Oh, okay. I'll see. I got to ask. Okay.
Yeah.
The DNA test is, are they taking a chunk out of you?
What you do is it's a little bit of saliva. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it goes on a Q-tip or something, and then it mixes with some kind of a blue solution, and then you...
And you've done this?
I have.
Okay.
Put it in the mail. And again, my mother's side always knew was, you know, Jewish. And my father's side always knew was, you know, some kind of a mutt mix of something. But then it just broke it all down. What I thought was fascinating was I have some Italian heritage. I have some French heritage that I don't know where. But apparently the DNA test goes back multiple generations,
yep.
like further back than what you can even trace mm-hmm. in terms of what's documented. So we're going now. We're going back, what, maybe 1,000 years, something along those lines.
What was this through? What was the company, or what was it?
It was just through Ancestry.com.
Oh, Ancestry.com.
Yeah, and then what's cool is it maps it out. Mm-hmm. So you see, you know, a certain percentage is Eastern European Jewish. A certain percentage is English, you know, from the United Kingdom or from France, or from, and it just breaks it down percentage. And then the cool thing about that is that if you submit your DNA, you can then do a DNA circle, and mm-hmm. then you're connected with other people who you might. I know it just blows you
but
away.
But how are they with DNA? How do they know?
Because those other people.
Part of your DNA speaks in French, you know. I mean, I'm trying to.
Well, if other people submit their DNA tests. Then what happens is if it's all grouped and analyzed, then they can go ahead and basically connect you.
Yeah, they can connect you. It's something called a family finder. It was interesting you talk about the DNA circle, right? Because for African Americans, we don't get the DNA circle, actually, because we don't necessarily have, you know, our past is a little bit more complicated, right? And it's funny when I do my friends who are of European descent and they have the DNA circle pop up, I'm always jealous because it gives you a connection and it says, hey, here you go. You have this common relative. Yeah. But I think DNA is really important. And I find, especially for African Americans, that they've been doing a lot more of it. And it's right. They do compare you to people they have in a database. And I found cousins and I found some folks that, I'm related to. One gentleman in particular, we have my fourth great grandmother was Mildred Payne, born a slave in 1800. His great great grandfather was a Payne, but he was born in, I believe, Tennessee or Mississippi. My family went from Virginia to New York, basically. They came from Virginia to upstate New York and then to Michigan. So we are related, but I'm not sure how. I think it's through that Payne ancestor, and it's probably through a child that may have been sold during slavery. So DNA has helped me kind of make that connection, and we're still covering that. Or uncovering that.
Well, let me grab another couple of emails here. Hold on, I'm gonna pull up the. Tisha sends us a note, and she just says, "Thanks for covering this, and thanks for the work in particular on behalf of African Americans. Our history is not always remembered; we're often forgotten, and this is the kind of work that is going to be more difficult for us, but it's still valuable for our heritage." What do you think of what Tisha writes there?
That's very true, and thank you for that, because it is important. And it's one of the things I love about being on Genealogy Roadshow and the segments that I get to do, because I get to talk about some difficult periods in American history and African-American history. And it's important that we understand and know that we can find our history, even though slavery, that peculiar institution they called it, existed. We can still find records related to our ancestors. So I encourage everyone to continue to do their search, even if you hit a roadblock, to keep going.
And when you do a search, you will be fascinated by some of the things that you find.
Yes.
Some of them will not be pleasant. Yeah. Some of them will be something
to
brag about.
But what do you mean by that, Josh?
Well, it was interesting. This is all documented. It's in newspapers, so it's not something that, I guess I should be bashful about. But I found an ancestor on my father's side who was murdered. Hmm. Or was, it was told amongst the family and written down in they would take Bibles and then mm-hmm. they would write notes in those Bibles. And one of the one of my relatives, she was apparently, I think it would be a third great aunt or something mm-hmm. like that. Her name was Anne, lived in Kansas. She was out during the day, came home with her son. They went to bed. They lived in a farm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got all the details.
Oh, yeah. This is all documented. And one night, she heard some rustling in the barn outside. So she went into the barn. Supposedly, the door of the barn was closed behind her, and she was locked into the barn. Her son heard this happen, got through a window into the barn, and then somehow they're all locked into the barn. The barn burns down. They burn down with it. They're killed.
Wow.
Now,
when was this?
This was 1880 in Salina, Kansas. Now, the story was amongst the family that they were murdered. But the actual documentation suggests it was an accident, as purported by the sheriff or whatever the authorities were, because they found the horse that ultimately was released from that got out of the barn. And then that's how they were able to find the burnt barn and then the victims inside. So wow. It's interesting to see this story documented, mm-hmm. Amongst, with newspapers, yep. and then going through Ancestry.com. And then to find the connections with your actual ancestors through cousins or whatnot who say, oh, yeah, that was written in the back of a Bible, mm-hmm. that wasn't an accident. That was a murder that took place. And I'm thinking to myself, my gosh. Mm-hmm. You know? And then, you know, I talked to my dad. Dad, did you know about that? Nope, didn't even know that relative existed.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. But I mean, I want to trace that. We should have our, it's 2016, we've got better technology now. We should be able to create better records of who we are. Let me grab a phone call. Gretchen in Scottsville wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Gretchen.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering about, I heard the four resources that you mentioned, but what about LDS, the Latter-day Saints? And I thought that the Mormon Church put a high emphasis on distributing and maintaining genealogy records.
Yes, they do. So actually, one of the sites I mentioned, FamilySearch.org, is actually owned by the Mormon Church, and that site is free.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Gretchen, for the phone call. I guess it's just something that the Mormon Church decided to, is valuable, huh?
Yeah, it's part of their religion, actually. So part of their belief is about if you have ancestors, and I am definitely condensing this, so please do not get offended anyway.
Absolutely. You're not a spokesperson
or anything. Yeah, right. So, but part of it is that, you know, if your ancestors were not Mormon, you can do your family history and research them and then baptize them as Mormon. So they provide the resources from around the world for you to do that. And they have a very large library in Salt Lake City where you can visit and see a ton of stuff there as well.
Vicky wants to know if through the show you have found anyone connected to really famous people or events.
Yes. So through the show, the first season was all about connections to famous people. And then we kind of changed it up a little bit. But yeah, I think we found someone connected to Davy Crockett, and then someone had a plate or something from Abraham Lincoln. Most of my stuff and most of the stories that I do are connected to events. So we've had people connected to, you know, things in the Civil War or World War One or Two and different things like that. So, yeah, we definitely have done that. Most of the people that submit are really just kind of looking for that lost relative. They're really just trying to break down that brick wall, so to speak.
So you would say even the majority of the 40,000
10,000
to get 40 people. 10,000, mm-hmm. They're looking for somebody.
They're looking for somebody. And it's not everyone wants to be related to someone famous, which is kind of interesting. But they just want to find out about their heritage. I mean, genealogy is the number two hobby in the country. So we have about 5 genealogy shows on today. You have Who Do You Think You Are? You have Finding Your Roots with Skip Gates. You have Genealogy Roadshow. You have Long Lost Relative. And then there's apparently some new show on Travel Channel that aired about genealogy. So it's so popular.
And it just starts by asking the right questions.
Yes.
You know, and especially with an older living relative.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
You know, like, for example, I remember walking through the Boston Public Garden,
mm-hmm.
and we'd go by this statue in the public garden. And it's Arthur Fiedler. Arthur Fiedler, one of the more famous conductors of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And my grandmother would walk by. She said, do you know who that is? I said, no. You know, I'm 8 years old. I don't know anything about this person. That's Arthur Fiedler. I said, oh, okay. She says, that's our cousin. I said, what? Our cousin is in the Boston Public Garden. And then she'd tell stories about Arthur Fiedler. Arthur Fiedler gave my grandmother a music stand for her as a wedding present for when she got married in 1936. And that music stand is, I don't know where that music stand is now. Mm. In fact, we have no idea. But bottom line is that just by, you know, being with your mm-hmm. older relatives, talking with them, you'll get stories.
Yeah, you will, definitely. And you need to just, you know, kind of interview your older relatives. And that was one of the things that was really important about me coming to Rochester. The reason that I went to PBS and said, I want to do this hometown tour. I'm going to Virginia as well, which is where my family were slaves. But coming here was because I know I still have relatives that are here, cousins, second and third cousins. And this was always, you know, we knew Detroit about upstate New York. And I always wondered, why do we go to upstate New York? Like, what was it, you know? And but seeing my cousins last night, meeting them for the first time, and just being able to share those stories is so important.
And I have the same thing, because apparently that fourth great-grandfather I was telling you about that served in the War of 1812 twice, he settled in a part of Erie County, New York, Concord, New York, and that particular area now is called Nichols Corners.
Are you related to everybody?
He is. I think he is. He's related. He's like one of those genealogy people, like a genealogy wonder. You know, Josh on the show is like that. He's related to everyone, has a colorful, you know, past. So, yeah.
But it's cool, but it was cool to find that out. And I said, I need to go to Nichols Corners, New York. This is an actual part of New York.
Yeah.
And apparently I have plentiful cousins there still.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can meet, you know, one or two of them. I don't know.
All right, yeah. I've got a pile more to get through. Let me grab another phone call. This is Christine in Canandaigua next up. Go ahead, Christine.
Yes, hello. Well, I've been doing some genealogical research, and what I'm finding really interesting is that local newspapers of years ago, many years ago, maybe the 1800s or even, well, not really 1800s, 1900s, kept very interesting obituaries, mm-hmm. obituaries that had what people did for a living, what their personalities were like, mm-hmm. exactly how they died. And what I find fascinating is that now that's not the case. Mm-hmm. We just say what, you know, where people died and where you can send condolences. And the other piece is that on gravestones, it's fascinating to go into graveyards and see how the culture of gravestones change, because there will be poems on some. There will be when people were married. Now, of course, people are putting pictures of their houses. I think it's fascinating if people, when they're doing this kind of work, really delve specifically into, say, for me, it's Ontario County and the newspaper records. You'll find an amazing plethora of interesting facts. Now, I have a quick story. May I share it?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I was delving into the history of the family home where my family has lived for 100 years, so I'm mm-hmm. still living there. My grandparents bought it in March 8, 1916. I was going into the history of the house. The people who lived there had gone to Ohio to visit friends, and they had years ago. You would say, "Gee, you have six children. I could really use someone to help me at my farm in Canandaigua." So they asked for one of the children, and they took the child, and then the father and mother were talking apparently, and the father had second thoughts, so he got on a horse, and he rode like the blazes to the train station, and he missed the train. So oh, wow. this young sibling or child was came back with the people that lived in the house that I'm living in. My family's lived in for 100 years. Well, I didn't know who that was, but then I was looking at a census record, and I noticed for those people that lived in the house, there was dad, mom, three siblings, and then a boy named Jack, who was 16, and it ended up being the same last name as the friends from a story earlier that they had visited in Ohio. Hmm. So a lot of this is putting puzzle pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
That is very true.
Yeah,
the puzzle pieces are really remarkable to see things come together.
Yeah, and I think the good point about the newspapers and obituaries, and I have found, especially for my family in this area, they are all over the Rochester paper, as well as some African-American papers in New York, talking about the comings and goings of who was visiting who in Detroit, who came over from Buffalo, all of those things as well.
All right, I see the phone ringing again. We'll get back to the phones in a second. Some online comments. Eric writes to us and says, Kenyatta mentioned this last night. It's important to start early. My grandmother died 3 months ago, and we've lost so much info.
Mm-hmm.
A great reminder, Eric, and goes okay, right there with the theme. Art writes to the program and says, Josh certainly is a fanatic. I want to know how much money he spent on this. How much?
Do you keep count?
Well, you know, the thing is that Ancestry.com is a membership. So you have to think of it like going to the gym,
mm-hmm.
or
so it's like a monthly investment.
It's a monthly investment,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and some people don't agree with that. Some people say, you know, these records should be freely available, and you shouldn't have to pay a membership. However,
what you're really paying is someone who's basically doing a tech report.
Well, what I've done is I've compiled, you know, basically what amounts to 500 years of heritage, and then have brought they call them allied families, because mm-hmm. apparently the pioneers, when they came here, there's only so many people to go around,
right,
so to speak.
So you can quit the membership, right? This isn't like one of those gym memberships that it's like a 2 year, you can't quit.
Yeah, it's not like that.
Okay.
You can quit at any time, and you can download all the data once it's compiled.
Right.
However, I think you do lose
You lose some stuff. I think one of the things about Ancestry or any of these sites that charge, you have to understand that they make agreements, content agreements, with different libraries or archives around the world in the country, and they have to pay someone to digitize and index that content.
Yeah. Right.
And that makes it easier for us to do the research.
And, you know, and frankly, yeah, I've spent a little bit of money, you know, per year on this. But for me, it's been an education.
There's no question talking to you that you find it totally worth it.
Oh, it's totally worth it. Yeah. It's absolutely, because what I've done is I've enlightened, you know, my parents, which is, you know, unusual for a child to enlighten a parent. But also my nephews, you know, I've said, Uncle Josh, tell us the story about, you know, Aunt Anne or, you know, or whatever. And then I can tell them that story and I can say, yeah, you know, your grandfather, he came from farmers in Kansas, but his great-grandfathers served in the War of 1812 and the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. And, you know, they just, you know, wide-eyed and really fascinated by all these stories. And you know what? That's worth it to be able to tell your, you know, your nephews or your children that story.
All right, we're going to try to fit in a couple more phone calls here. Mike and Irondequoit next. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, what a fascinating program.
Blame Kenyatta. She does great stuff.
One of your guests had mentioned how the evolution of gravestones, headstones, has made them so much smaller, and that a lot of history that used to be on there is lost. And that's a very practical reason. Maintenance. Mm-hmm. If you have a flat metal plaque on the ground, lawnmowers can go right over it with no problem, and you don't have to pay somebody to cut the grass around these tall headstones. Purely financial.
Okay.
Mike, I had never thought of it that way. Makes sense, I guess.
But the engravings, though, were more interesting then.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the
1700s. Back then.
Here lies, you know, Joseph Smith, and then there's a rhyme associated with that. And, then, you know, do you see that today?
No.
Not very much.
No.
There's probably once in a while. It's like most obituaries are boring now, and then the ones that go viral are the really good ones because it's so unusual.
Right.
So, but very, Mike, thanks for the phone call. I had not thought about it that way. Danny in Pittsford. Go ahead, Danny.
Hi. I'm curious, what about those of us who are children of survivors of the Holocaust? How do we seek out information about our history if most of the family was murdered?
So on genealogy,
thank you, Danny.
So in Genealogy Roadshow, I believe Josh did this story. We had someone whose family was part of the Holocaust and whose family, a relative, had been murdered. We do have researchers that help us, and we have some researchers that specialize in that area. One of the things I would suggest is, I always suggest to everyone, you're starting with this, especially with an event like that, to go to FamilySearch.org and go to their wiki and search for trying to find records, you know, Jewish heritage or heritage around that time of the Holocaust. And then also there are a couple of genealogical societies that specialize in that type of research and have researchers who can help you out. You know, just like with any tragic event that occurs, there is going to be some type of record that's kept. It may not be the most dense, you know, have as much information, but there will be something. And you can definitely find that information. It's just going to be a bit more challenging.
Does this work with those of Russian Jewish heritage as well, going back to the, like, if you came in from the late 1800s, early 1900s?
Yes. Yeah. So it's definitely, it's doable, but it's a challenging, you know, like slavery genealogy is challenging as well.
Sure. And you know what? Maybe that's a good point to make the... ask the last question I wanted to ask before we lose the hour, which is, you know, Josh mentioned, be prepared the farther back you go to occasionally find things that won't be the most proud or whatever. I mean, it's not all nobility.
But it'll come also with a lot of pride as well.
Of course.
It'll be a balance.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we have to be careful in this country that sometimes we like to pretend that what we are maybe ashamed of didn't happen.
Right.
And look, you know, Kenyatta, I mean, you work going back to families that had slavery in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it may be more important than ever, not because we want to shame ourselves or our country, but to understand what we have done, what we have been, what we have experienced, to continue to make I think, for a better world for future generations. I'm curious what you think about that.
I totally agree. And I think one of the reasons why I chose to focus on slave genealogy in this era is because it's so challenging and it's difficult. And, you know, for me, being a lawyer, I can remove the emotion from it when I'm doing the research. I still get emotional, but I, you know, when you see a person with a dollar value attached to them buried five pages deep in a will or an estate, that's a difficult thing, but I know it's an important thing. And I think we do need to study slavery and we do need to discuss it, because a lot of the things, in my opinion, that occur in the African-American community are a direct result from that. The lack of not being able to be educated. You'd be killed if you knew how to read or write. Not really recognizing marriages, right? So you're jumping over the broom, or selling off fathers to farms, leaving mothers to raise their children. So all of those things, I think, are important to discuss. But what I find on the show, and what I find so fascinating, is no matter what someone's history, they come away changed and their life is different. And, you know, my ancestors were slaves, and there's some free people of color in my family background as well. But I'm not ashamed of that. You know, they survived. They were able to get through that. So I could sit here, and it's important for me to share their story.
And sometimes it takes a family event to really, you know, I had a family event take place, a death, and it just made me wonder a little bit, what about this name that I carry? We all carry a last name.
Mm-hmm.
What is to that last name? You know, what does the Nichols side have in its past? What do the families that brought about your own personhood, you know, what do they have to say? Because don't forget, you carry a name, but you have people that allowed you to carry that name as well. You have other family names. So you have the allied families. Mm-hmm. You have, don't forget, not just your father's name that you're carrying, but your mother's side.
Well, and that's the reason my son's middle name is Keeley, because we were looking back and we said, we want the middle name to be a family name. We didn't know we had Irish in us. And my mother said, a lot of women lost the name through marriage. So we said, boy or girl, middle name is going to be Keeley.
That's true.
Just to try to keep that alive. And that's not even going that far back.
Right.
But Kenyatta and Josh, I want to thank you. You have convinced me. We're getting a membership. We'll go back. We'll start it up. But Josh, I appreciate it. I know your passion for this is genuine. Thanks for coming and sharing.
You're very welcome.
And Kenyatta, you're going to see Kenyatta Berry's work starting next month, season 3, May 17th, 8 p.m. on WXXI-TV, on PBS. The work you're doing is fun to watch, but it is important.
Thank you.
And I'm really glad to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having
Kenyatta
me.
Berry joining us for the hour. Our thanks to Megan Mack, producer, and Val Labanca, the engineer of this broadcast. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.